Blog Talk Radio.
This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. Our show tonight is abolishing probate, and I know we have been away for a while, but I've had a lot of things going on here that needed my attention, and I am one of those people that family comes first. So, been dealing with things here. We're back up and running. We should be good to go. Just as a reminder, all of these shows on probate, guardianship, etc., are supported by the Whistleblower Summit taking place in Washington, D.C. at the end of every July. We'll be there again this year with our panel. And this last year, I want to thank everyone who showed up. We caused an increase of 52% in their attendance to the summit, and it was all directly related to the panel on probate and guardianship abuse. So we are making a difference. There's a lot going on in every state. People are becoming more active. More people are challenging this system, which is human trafficking. I don't care how you throw it up in the air, slice and dice it and dress it up. A pig is still a pig. I don't care how much lipstick you put on it. This is human trafficking. This is the theft of estates by kidnapping, imprisoning, isolating, chemically restraining, and stealing the estate and identity of people that have been targeted. And we are steadily getting the word out for those listening who think we're doing the wrong thing and wish we'd shut up. We're not gonna. We're here. We're gonna stay here. We're gonna keep talking until you change this system and stop this. This is no different. This is no different than trafficking women and children for sex, or the selling and kidnapping of children through CPS. APS, of course, is predicated upon the success of CPS and how lucrative it became in the buying and selling of our children. And they rip our families apart every day, taking children away from parents with no evidence of wrongdoing. The same thing happens in these probate tribunals. People have no defense. They have no defense against the people that come against them. They are forced to pay for the judge, the jury, and the executioner. I think in everything that goes on, this has to be the most insidious part of this system, that the estate of the person being targeted is forced to pay all the fees associated with the people coming against them, and there is no cap on those. There is no point at which they are forced to stop taking money from the estate. They can bill whatever they want, as much as they want, for the most ridiculous of things. One of the people who has been in this fight probably even longer than I have, and we've had her on before, but it's been a few years back, is our guest tonight. And Claudia Donnelly has been waging what virtually has been a one-woman battle out in the state of Washington. And she is just a nonstop advocate and activist. Claudia, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Marty.
Yes. This has just been such a... I don't know how you put up with what's going on out there. In our earlier conversations, we talked about there, to me, seems to be an effort now to marginalize you. They've tried everything else out to shut you up. And now they're accusing you of being disruptive and for what? Raising your hand and asking a question?
Yeah.
Claudia, Why don't you start with reading that letter that was sent to you about you being disruptive?
Okay, let me get it.
Yeah, you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Okay. There was, let me give you a little background.
Okay.
A couple of years ago, Carrie Kasem came to Washington and tried to get the curb two bills passed. And it went before this Washington House Judiciary Committee. And even though Carrie's attorney had worked with some of our people, or worked with some of the people that write the bills, the House Judiciary Committee killed it, or more or less, the chairman of the committee chaired it. She killed it. She then, following summer, held a series of workshops. There were three of them, and she invited attorneys, guardians, disability rights people, the long-term care ombudsman, and we first met in an attorney's office in Tacoma, and I got there late because I got lost, but I got there, and, you know, people were talking, they'd raise their hands, and she'd call on them, which is what I did, and I just listened, and then the following week, or a couple weeks later, she had another meeting in another part of Tacoma, and then the third week, another part of Tacoma, and she got a bill passed, and Governor Inslee signed it. And what this does is, instead of Carrie's two bills, one was association and one was isolation, she had one bill. And this one bill prevented isolation of a senior and also allowed them to associate with whomever they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And it was signed. And the only thing that I can see wrong with it, and I've mentioned this to a number of people, is that the bill is written so that if a guardian isolates a person, then it can go after the guardian. But what happens if it's a relative of yours?
Yeah.
And an example I got a call from somebody up in OMAC, which is the northeastern part of the state. And this lady's mom had been held hostage, so to speak, by her sister. And so for 3 years, she didn't get to see her mother. And that bill wouldn't have done anything to help her. And, you know, the same with my mom. She lived about 2 miles from me. And I went up one day. And I understand what my siblings were trying to do. They were trying to protect her. She loved to walk around the neighborhood, and she had Alzheimer's, dementia, but somehow she made her way home. But what they did is that they locked the front gates and they put padlocks on the gates so she couldn't get out. And I called APS one day about the fact that my siblings may have been financially exploiting her. Well, just like if you're being abused by a domestic partner, they sent somebody out to talk to her. So they asked her if she wanted an investigation, and she said no. And so the guy from APS had to jump over the fence. He couldn't just walk up. She couldn't have relatives come visit her. She couldn't have friends come visit her unless they wanted to jump the fence. And I can't remember if I said something or not, but anyway, I just kept watch, and a few months later, I filed a second letter with APS about financial exploitation, and this time, APS sent the letter to the King County Detective's Office in Kent, which is about 8 miles from Renton, from where I live, and I got a phone call from the detective, and he said, "Oh, just bring me up to date on what's happening." So I did, and as it turns out, every time I got some documents or I heard something, I'd call him or take some out there. He closed the case without telling me, And I didn't find this out until 2009. Well, then a second detective looked at the documents and said, oh, yeah, I need to talk to Paige. And this is Paige Ulrey, who is a deputy district attorney in the King County District Attorney's Office. And he said, yeah, it looks like financial exploitation. But then Paige got back to me and said that the statute of limitations had run out. So I said, okay, whatever. So I've just been going down to Olympia and testifying at various bills. But anyway, I had heard rumors this past summer that somebody was working on something to fix or change our guardian laws. And nobody called me. Nobody sent me anything saying, do you want to join this group? Do you want to help us? Et cetera, et cetera. So I got, there was a meeting of the Joint Committee on Aging in October. And it's one of those meetings where there were a lot of people who wanted to talk about how they were being abused in Washington State. But that committee only gave us 2 minutes apiece to talk. And one of the members of that was Representative Jenkins of Tacoma. And she mentioned as she was leaving the meeting that she was having another committee meeting to discuss changes to guardian laws. And that's the first I had heard about it. But then I went to another different meeting, this one of the Certified Professional Guardian Board, and the new manager there, Ms. Johnson, stated that she was on one of these committees that was meeting. And so, I mean, I'm outspoken, and I get frustrated, and sometimes I can be rather sarcastic, and I admit that. And so I sent Representative Jenkins a meeting because I wasn't given any information as to what was going on. And I've been doing this for, let's see, 13 years since my mother was a victim. And I sent Representative Jenkins an email. Let's see if I can pull it up and read it to you. She didn't like my attitude, and part of my attitude is the fact that we have a governor who thinks he's going to run for president, but you asked to meet with him to talk about guardianship issues or elder abuse issues, and it's like he's not around. He's often, you know, Alabama or Texas or whatever. He's always busy.
Isn't that strange how that happens? I don't care who you want to talk to. That way, why they're just so busy that they're flying to the moon, and when they get back, they'll get in touch with you. You know, go ahead.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that on the TV that we watch at night for the news, there'll be stories about him meeting with mothers, with preschoolers, and you know the cute little kids. They are cute. And it's, in a way, cool seeing him interact with them. But, I mean, little kids grow up to be adults and then seniors, and he should be concerned about everybody. But this is what I wrote to Representative Jenkins. So, do you care about the citizens of our state and your district? I have looked at the PDC, which is the Public Disclosure Commission, and it tells who is funding the candidate's election campaign to see who has contributed to your re-election campaign and found nothing. I guess that you just don't want people in your district who are trying to protect their parents, grandparents from corrupt professional guardians to know what you are doing behind their backs to support professional guardians versus our seniors. She is an attorney. So I give her that, and, I mean, she can have anybody on her committee that she wants. But she's had attorneys, like I said, guardians, judges, disability rights people, but no advocates. And I know at least 30 people in our state who would be glad to speak to her and tell her what guardians have done to their families, but – you know, legislators say they know best and all.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Well, you know, and that's the thing, Claudia. The reason they don't talk to the family members and the advocates and the activists is because then it gives them plausible deniability. Then they stand up later when they get caught. When this blows up and say, well, nobody told us. Well, nobody contacted us. No, you wouldn't talk to anybody. These secret meetings you're talking about, this goes on in every state, and it's always with I tell people constantly to beware of the word stakeholders. Ask who those stakeholders are. When they start referring to stakeholders, that's a catch-all phrase. And that means
mm-hmm.
the elder law attorneys, the Bar Association, the Judiciary Committees, the National College of Probate Judges, the National Guardianship Association, anybody that has a vested financial interest in keeping this system running the way it is, that's who they meet with. But they will not meet with – go ahead.
Well, even with the guardian board, we have a guardian board made up of judges, guardians, attorneys, support people. But again, nobody like me or people from my group are invited to attend. We can go once every 3 months, and we're allowed to speak for about 5 minutes, and then that's it.
Uh-huh. Oh.
And it's like, it's like the fox guarding the hen house because, you know, they're always cozying up to the guardians and this and that. And it's like we're trying to protect people here, not harm them. But anyway.
Well, you know, you mentioned about, you know, the Open Records Act or whatever you called it there. And see, and you look at that and you can see exactly who they're representing by who deposited money into their campaign coffers. That's who they're sucking up to. If you had $200,000 to dump in their camp, they'd let you talk. You know, but you don't have. So they're not interested in anything you've got to say because you're not financing them. And this is what this is, this thing of paying to get these people elected, paying to get them put in place to keep the system running. And always go to another place you can go is opensecrets.org. And you can type in the name, and that will and click the money trail tab, and it will tell you everybody they have taken money from under the supposed campaign contributions. It's bribery, plain and simple.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like Marty and I talked the other night, and we both agree, you know, a person like me, a person like her, other people who are trying to help the elderly, we're harassed, we are shouted at, we're called names. You know, people don't listen to us. And, I mean, that's normal. And it's like, you know, she did this to me. Well, I, in a way, let two of her superiors know today that she sent me this note. Anyway, it says, "Dear Claudia, I respect and share your desire to help improve the guardianship system in Washington, but your email illustrates that the impact of your advocacy is having the opposite effect. I say this as someone who has primed or co-sponsored many pieces of legislation to improve our guardianship system. What I do basically is that I will go on Facebook and I will see, let's say there's an article by somebody on the NASCA website or somebody just posts an article about how their parent was abused. And if I think it's of interest to people in our state, I'll copy it and put it into an email and send it out to people. And I send it out to legislators. I mean, that's the only way they're going to know that I'm still around and, you know, this is happening in other states and it may be happening in our state. And then she goes on and says, "I will not use my legislative email to go into details on electoral matters, but I believe it is important to correct factual inaccuracies. The first paragraph of your email illustrates that either you are not truthful or you failed to accurately review the Public Disclosure Commission website. I've been in elective office for 8 years and have fully reported every contribution I've received."
You'd
and
be.
It says, "Claudia." Okay, let's see if I can find the rest of it.
Yeah.
When you send email after emailing indicating that you want to fix guardianship system, the impact of your ad hominem, whatever that means, attacks, inability
personal
or disinterest in focusing on solutions and application of incidents outside of Washington to Washington's guardianship system has dramatically slowed the progress we've been able to make in reforming our guardianship system. Frankly, it's hard to find experts who want to work on these issues because of the completely inappropriate way you engage. Why would anyone work on these issues when you consistently ascribe bad faith to their work and spend most of the time attacking them? I understand that you don't agree with rulings of the court and approaches taken to address real problems. It appears that you believe yourself to be the sole appropriate arbiter of what is right in this field, and that people should work on these issues only in ways that you approve that is acceptable. The art of good legislation is to have diverse opinions and a respectful dialogue. I experience you as being disinterested or in either of these things. I'm sorry that you believe your mother was abused by a professional guardian. I'm not sure if the case you reference, Raven versus DSHS, relates to your mother. Now, what happened is that many, many years ago, a lady by the name of Raven wanted to stay in her home. She was a nurse. She had an infection in her leg, and she did not want to go to a nursing home, which is where a lot of the people end up. And so the DSHS, which is APS, took the guardian to court. The guardian lost and took it to the appeals court and ended up at the state Supreme Court. And what they said was that if a person has decided or designated before they had declared incapacitated and they want to stay in their home, they do not want medical care, that the guardian has to obey what they said. Now, my mother, my husband and I would take her places, and a lot of her friends were in nursing homes, and she would say, I don't want to be there. I don't like it. I didn't like it. I don't want to be there. And both my husband and I, which are sane and competent, heard that. And when we got the guardian, I told the guardian this, and he said, oh, I can live with that. But what happened was that my brother went behind my back and worked a secret deal out with the guardian and said, next time mom passes out from a TIA, which is a mini stroke, instead of going back home, she's going to go into a facility down in Federal Way, which is about 25 miles from here. That happened on March 6, 2006. And first time I went to visit her, she had all of her things stacked up, ready for me to take him out of the facility. She didn't want to be there, and I couldn't do anything about it. I mean, I was so sad that I had gotten a guardian. She was crying. She was upset. Eventually, she was there for a year and a half, and she could see the writing on the wall and took her own life, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. Anyway, that's the case. I have reviewed the case. And above all, I believe it illustrates both DSHS's and the court's interest in guardianship cases. The Supreme Court held that because the role of the professional guardian is to do all they can to make decisions based on the incapacitated person's desires, not substitute judgment, a guardian's good faith decision not to place an incapacitated person in a nursing home against the incapacitated person's wishes cannot be the basis for finding of neglect. It's not clear to me whether you agree or disagree with the holding, but I believe the holding is well within the appropriate interpretation of the law and is an appropriate policy choice as well. Again, Claudia, it seems you make differing opinions with bad faith. This approach hurts progress. I do not like exposing people who are working in good faith on guardianship issues to your email hectoring and ad hominem attacks. I will certainly invite you to the next meeting, which I was invited but didn't go, of the group. But I ask that you deeply think about your behavior and attend only if you can engage in productive dialogue. I hope this is not true, but I...
Yeah, ad hominem means personal attacks that you attack personally. We see people, I think one of the most damaging things in this whole community fighting this is when someone decides that they're a celebrity or a star and they begin attacking other people that they see as a challenge to that position. I'm not interested in either of those things. But with this woman, this is a very clever, contrived letter. You have every right to ask questions, to voice your opinion, whether they like it or they don't. The idea of these meetings, Claudia, as you know, is not to schmooze everybody. You're supposed to be working out problems. You're supposed to be coming to resolution. But these people are not at all interested in resolution, because if they resolved the issue, if they actually fixed the probate system, and it, in my opinion, it needs to be abolished. If you're going to steal somebody's identity and their estate and declare them incapacitated, you need to do that in front of a jury and present your evidence. But we don't. We put them in a tribunal. And so
what they've done here is, and it's something we can get into later, they've got a new program that they've set up. It's called Uniform Log Commission, Uniform Act of Guardianship, that they want to replace some of our laws. And what I was told by the state senator who's working on this is that he doesn't know that much about guardianship, so he turned it over to an elder law attorney. And it's like, oh, dear.
Well, that's
got problems.
Yeah, you just turned it over to one of the stakeholders.
And then it says, the ending, it says, I hope that this is not true, but I expect that this response will result in only more accusations from you. If so, please know that this is the last correspondence you will receive from my office. Sincerely, signed, Lori Jenkins.
Oh, my goodness. The last as well. See, Mr. Jenkins has stepped outside of his own authority there, because as a public servant, he has no right to refuse to correspond with you. You are a citizen of that state, and I don't care what district you're in and what district he's in. This thing about I can't talk to you, you're not in my district, then you put a signing statement on every vote you make that it applies only to the people in your district, whether it's pro or con. Otherwise, you are required by your public service as a representative of the state to speak with anyone who wishes to speak with you. This thing of these people setting them up as, themselves up as some kind of royalty, that somehow we are subservient to them, as I reminded a senator in D.C. who was trying to speak down to me, that I would appreciate it if he would assume a more subordinate attitude, considering I employed him, he didn't employ me. And
sent her a note that you got a copy of, and it says, Dear Representative Jenkins, I am talking on a radio show tonight, and one of the topics will be this note. I know you won't admit comment on it, but you mentioned that I was disruptive at previous meetings. Do you have specific examples? I remember a meeting at a law office near Commencement Bay I attended that you chaired. Do you remember what I did? I sat behind you. I raised my hand and waited for you to call on me. Then I attended another meeting in Portland off Portland Avenue in Tacoma. We didn't learn of your meetings or Senator Peterson's meetings until a joint committee meetings in October. I also heard at a CPGB meeting that Stacey Johnson was one of the committees. I admit that I can get frustrated over by a lack of concern on guardianship issues, but and it can be a little sarcastic. I don't give up. Are you talking about how I feel that Governor Inslee is MIA in trying to help our seniors? One other comment. Can you please tell me what bills you sponsored? Because she's big on saying that she helped co-sponsor some bills. And it's like, no, I've been doing this for 13 years, and you've only done two.
Oh.
And, yeah, regarding isolation of seniors and association. I have stated several times that the bill Governor Inslee signed needs updated. Your bill deals with isolation with a guardian. What about seniors who are isolated by their siblings? And it says, I send you articles about what is happening out of state in regards to guardianship issues, as it shows what is happening in other areas that could be happening in Washington State. In my opinion, and the opinion of people I talk to, keeping guardianship issues in front of our legislators keeps the topic fresh in your minds. I look forward to getting some answers from you so I can work on my behavior. So I'll let you know if I ever hear back from
yes.
her.
You know, the thing is, Claudia, these people always seem to be insulted by the fact that the public, if they aren't sitting there going, yeah, oh, yeah, you're right, is somehow you're being intrusive. You somehow have upset the apple cart. You're being obstructive. You're being disruptive because you don't go along with the program. When you sit in these meetings, and I have, and to hear these people talk, and they are not the least bit interested in what the public has to say. They are not even remotely interested. What they're interested in is the people that they brought for their dog and pony show, these same people that you talked about, the stakeholders, the attorneys, the guardians, this, you know, agency, that agency. They want to listen to them and what they have to say. And, you know, they only care. They're only doing it because these people don't give a rat's fat behind. All they're interested in is keeping that program going and the money rolling in. That's all they are interested in.
One thing I told them last week or the week before, many, many, many years ago when our founding fathers were fighting for the freedoms that we have today, one of my ancestors fought in the Revolutionary War at Concord. And I mentioned this, and I said, you know, I'm thankful for what he did because I have a right to free speech. I have a right to ask questions. And that was one of the things that those people back then wanted. They wanted to ask questions of the king. Well, he wasn't around, you know, so who did they talk to? So, I mean,
well, and
I
think you're absolutely correct in the fact that these people are public servants. Their job is to listen to you. You're the people they are supposed to represent, not special interests, not, you know, some collusion of attorneys and guardians and this one and that one. They're supposed to listen to you, the public. And we've been screaming about this, you even longer than me, about this whole thing. And nothing has changed. What they do is they twist and contort the language. They put out bills that are absolutely pointless and senseless and have no teeth to them. And I've tried to explain to people, Claudia, even if you bring forward a good bill, I mean, it's got teeth in it, has the citing of crime in it, who would be guilty of that crime, who is to do enforcement, who's to do in prosecution, you know, whether this is civil or criminal, any of those things, and you've got this good bill, and you present it, and they say, oh, yeah, I'll sponsor that. And most people have no idea that once that bill is tabled, before it ever comes to a vote, it can be amended 1,000 times and rewritten so that what gets passed bears little to no resemblance to what you initially presented. And they don't have to tell you. The bill gets passed and people stand up and cheer and think, oh, we got this done, we got this. And then they find out that the bill has been watered down so badly by these same people who are supposed to represent them, and it does nothing. But everybody's walking around in la-la land thinking, oh, we finally got a bill passed, only to find out they got betrayed by the people they put in office.
Yeah.
And this stuff just flies all over me. It just flies all over me. The idea, it used to be, Claudia, years ago, when all I did, I used to work for, like, you know, senators and representatives here in the state, and I would decipher legislation. I would backtrack it through code and title and tell them what the bill actually said as opposed to what the title said. Because when you get into those backtracking changes, there's the story. The devil is always in the detail. But legislation used to come with, above the title of the bill, it would say this is printed under, you know, this is offered under constitutional authority, such and such and such. Then it would have the title of the bill number, who sponsored it or wrote it or whatever. And then it would have a small statement at the beginning before the text. And it would say, this bill is intended. This is the intent of this bill to do this, this, and this. And nothing else is to be construed from, reinterpreted, or taken from this bill. That disappeared about somewhere between 15, 20 years ago. And now bills are written in such a way that they can be interpreted, reinterpreted, reinterpreted again, and we get what's called case law instead of actual constitutional law. And that means that a judge said, well, yeah, this is against the law, actual law, but I'm going to say it's okay anyway. And they use that as evidence that this law stands. Case law is not constitutional law. Every time you see something being supported by case law, it is something that was arbitrarily determined to be okay when the judge who made that determination knew damn well it wasn't. And but they use it as evidence, and once that's established, then they roll with it. But if people understood, you know, put that disclaimer at the top of that legislation, when you offer legislation, that nothing is to be altered or amended, nothing is to be removed or added, and it deals with this issue only, and it is to be voted on as it exists and is presented, and don't allow them to change it. There's so much trickery that goes on, not only on the state, but on the federal level when it comes to legislation that so many people don't know anything about. It never occurs to them that, you know, we presented a bill and that somebody was going to go in there without telling them and take out the part that would give it teeth, that would give it, you know, some power, some effect. They don't understand that that happens every day of the week. Stuff is inserted that has nothing to do. I don't know how Washington State is, Claudia, but here in Minnesota, we have a one-issue rule, and that is a bill can deal solely with one issue and one issue only. You can't throw the kitchen sink in there. And
we have that, too. There's been a gentleman up in Everett, which is north of Seattle, and he sponsored initiatives the last three or four years trying to reduce our car tabs back down to $30 per vehicle. And, you know, the initiative will pass overwhelmingly. And then all the car dealers and whoever else will take it to court. It usually ends up to the state Supreme Court, and they'll pick and they'll choose and they'll read it, you know, with a fine-tooth comb, and they'll say, whoops, that bill deals with two items.
There you
go. It can't be legal, so they'll throw it out.
Okay. All right. We lost you there for about 35 seconds.
Okay. Sorry.
That's all right.
Anyway, another thing that we agree that we should talk about is what's happening in our state, and what they're trying to do is change guardian laws by using what's called the Uniform Guardianship Act.
Yes.
And this is, I found something about it. It says the Uniform Law Commission, known as the ULC, and also known as the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, established in 1892, provides states with nonpartisan, well-conceived, and well-drafted legislation that brings clarity and stability to critical areas of state statutory law. So right now I think they have, from what I read, there are like 23 states across the country that are doing this. So they want something that if it starts with the guardianship here in Washington and it ends up in Maine, if Maine uses this bunch of laws, then, you know, they're good.
Well, the thing is with that Uniform Act is there have been many states sign on to it, but participation in it is voluntary. And
yeah, I know.
Yeah, so they, even though they sign on to it, they can, case by case, decide whether or not they want to abide by it. There again, the teeth was taken out of this. My concern about uniform laws is anytime you see them trying to pass uniform laws, again, the devil is always in the details. This gives them just unmitigated power, state lines. And that I don't like. I think each state should manage this on their own. And if nothing else, set the example. And I think it's unfortunate, like out there with you, that you know what the issues are. You know what the problems are. You've been very diligent in expressing what the flaws are in this system and how it's harming people. And yet after 13 years, you're still where you were on day one, because you cannot, even as these people change in office, the power behind this is so massive and the money is so prolific that they're not about to change it. I don't know that personally, you know, I don't know about this uniform law, whether I'd have to think about it really hard, look at it really closely. You always hope for the best. You always hope for the best and expect the worst.
Well, what they're doing here is that they're taking the general gist of the law or what's written down and changing it to fit Washington. So how is that going to help if Oregon has a, you know, their own law based on this, or Idaho or Minnesota, you know? And I've gone through this, the third draft, and I don't like it. They have definitions, and one of the things that I particularly don't like, that nobody can answer my question, is they talk about reasonable compensation for attorneys and guardians, but they don't define what's reasonable.
Yes, and they won't either, will they?
No. I mean, I've gone to guardian court, and the judge gets a list of all the charges, and it says, okay, I'll stamp it, and he does, and that's it. And he doesn't have time to look at all the charges. He's not an accountant.
No, and he's not a judge either. But go ahead.
No. One thing about this that I don't like is that right now, I'm dealing with how our seniors are not being protected. This guardian law, or this uniform law, deals with both minors and seniors in one bill.
Yes, they did that here in Minnesota in 2018. They passed this monstrosity of a bill that dealt with minors and seniors, foster care and nursing homes. It dealt with wages and how many staff they had to have. And at the end of it, they changed the patient bill of rights and codified into law. You cannot, it says in the patient bill of rights, that a nursing home cannot make it a requirement for isolation for you to be admitted unless ordered by a guardian or a conservator. They did this before the summit last year. They codified into law the ability of these guardians, which violates statute, to isolate. This is what our state legislature did. Now, as I understand it, Governor Dayton vetoed that bill. And they're still going to try and pass this thing again, although the changes to the patient bill of rights stood. I want to know how that happened. But the idea, this very thing we've all been fighting, the ability of these guardians and conservators to arbitrarily isolate, or, you know, your sibling, to arbitrarily isolate that senior person. I don't care if they're stark, raving, crazy. They have a right to have visitors, to have a social life, to be connected, to be communicating with other people. And the only reason I have ever been able to find for isolating someone in this manner is because it facilitates the abuse and neglect in the nursing home, because who's going to see it? Nobody can get in to see that person. So this works out. This allows the nursing home owner to short staff and not provide the services they claim they're providing. And who suffers for it? That elder person. Who's going to know about it? Nobody. because nobody can see them.
Yeah, like at the beginning of our show, of the show, I ask questions. I see things. You know, mm-hmm. I would see my mother. She had a problem with her right hand, and she had a wrist guard over, you know, the hand portion. And there were times uh-huh. I'd come in and see her, and the guard would be on the left hand. And it's like,
oh, wow.
Why is that happening? You know,
yeah.
Nobody would answer me.
Yeah.
Or her name was Roxane, Roxaine. And I would be sitting with her or doing something with her, and somebody, like a nursing assistant, would come up and say, Roxane, it's time for lunch. Okay, she spent a year and a half out there, and they didn't know her name.
Yeah.
And so I would report that, and the facility got mad at me because they were calling a person by her wrong name. And,
oh.
I mean, I was sticking with my mother.
Yeah. I have to give credit. There is a nursing home facility here in this small town where I live. And you can walk in the door of that place any day of the week. And the only question anybody will ask you is, do you need help finding someone? And they have all these activities going on. These people, there's a large community room. They have, like, the school puts on plays, puts on Christmas shows. They bring in, polka is real big up here for these elderly people, and they bring in polka bands for them. They'll get up and dance, but they play games. They have movie night. They have all this stuff, and you can come at any time. You can have lunch or dinner with them. They encourage the public to come in. You don't go into this place and see people strapped into a chair with their head off to the side, drooling out of their mouth, or laying in their bed staring at the ceiling and not moving for days at a time. You don't see this. There are good facilities out there, but they're few and far between, very few and far between. And Kim Stover has a documentary coming out called No More Silence. And it is about these atrocities going on in these nursing homes. And if this doesn't rattle some cages on what happens to elderly people in these warehouses that they oftentimes call nursing homes while they short staff to increase their bottom line, the indignities inflicted on these people that they have captured on video, if this isn't a wake-up call that something has to be done about this. I know, you know, one of the things I researched here recently, Claudia, was, of course, you know, I run a hospice show now. That'll be coming back on air Wednesday evening. And I just produce it, but it's with Murdered by Hospice Group, and hospice having become now the Grim Reaper. The idea that in 2010, and they reported it in 2011, and I've been tracking it ever since, 2.1 million elderly people on Medicare died.
Mm.
I never heard a word about it. Of those.
Yeah.
Of
I need
those
to tell
people.
You a story of something that happened where my mom was.
What?
I made friends with somebody whose dad was out there, and he would go in. And he would have his camera, and he would take pictures of his dad laying in his own feces. And he'd try to talk to the nursing staff, and they wouldn't believe him. Well, then this guy, somehow, I don't remember how, but a guardian was appointed for the dad. And one night, a lady was coming out, from visiting her husband, and she never made it home. And the kids called, you know, the police the next day. They found her car at the facility. They opened the trunk and found her remains.
Oh, my God.
And so they started looking for suspects. Well, the first person that the facility and the guardian told police about was my friend. And he was no more a murderer than I am. And
right.
But the police kept going after him and kept looking at him, kept talking to him. And they ended up at his house one night, and they arrested him. And they sort of bruised his shoulder and caused some damage to him, hurt him. And they took him off, and they charged him with murder. Well, as it turns out, this lady fought like hell, pardon me, to ward off her attacker and
uh-huh.
got some skin or something underneath her nails.
Yes.
And so they took the DNA and they ran it, and it turned out that it was DNA from one of the staff members of this facility.
Oh, God.
And so they confronted him, and they looked at his wallet, and he had some of the credit cards from this lady. So they arrested him and charged him with murder, and he was convicted, and I think he's still in jail. But,
uh-huh.
you know, they didn't care that they hurt Randy's car. They didn't care that they hurt him. And so they took the Federal Way Police Department to task, and they eventually settled. But, I mean, why pick on Randy? He was a nice guy. We both had
yes.
complaints because our parents were being treated poorly.
Right.
You know,
well, that's
my mom
exactly
didn't
why.
Want to be there.
That's exactly
and
why.
And I let people know, or even letting people know, they didn't care. You know, my mom liked being outside. And the last time I was out there seeing her before she passed away, they had pillows by the doors that opened out to the courtyard so that nobody could go outside.
Oh
my
God.
Mom loved being outside. She loved being with nature. And
right.
and they don't care. They, like you say, it's, you know, she needed taken care of, and so, you know, by golly, we'll just take care of her. And then who cares
yeah.
what she wants and all that
yeah.
good stuff. So.
Well, you know, and that's, I think, the basis of the whole problem with this system. Once you're in it, once you've been targeted and taken prisoner in the system, and that's what I consider it, you've been taken hostage.
Yeah.
You become chattel property. Being declared a ward of the state, it removes all of your existence. It removes your identity. It removes all your constitutional rights and protections. It removes your access to the law because you're in a tribunal. And when they call it administrative law, there is no such thing. Statute, or what they call statutory law, is not law at all. These are fictionals, creations that are set up specifically to void your rights, to avoid due process, to avoid you getting a jury trial, to avoid you having access to the law. That's what statute is all about.
Mm-hmm.
The statute, they'll say it's oh, it's to make society run more efficiently and smooth. No, it isn't. It's so that a specific group of people, in this case, these stakeholders they speak of, it gives them immunities and the right to do things to other human beings that in any other situation would put them in prison. And I mean,
yeah.
honestly, now, Claudia, the thing is, if you took somebody prisoner, held them in your house, assumed their name, went out, accessed all their assets, sold their house, took everything that they owned of personal value, and you got caught doing it, you'd go to prison.
Mm-hmm.
But these professional predators, it's just all in a day's work.
It's like we've mentioned around here. Our prisoners in our state facilities, you know, like Walla Walla and Shelton or whatever,
yeah.
they have more rights than their elderly do.
Yes.
You know, they can
yes.
receive visitors, they can make phone calls, they can get mail, they can
yep.
go on outings. You know, our elderly
yep.
can't.
No, no. And that's the thing. A prisoner, even a felon, has more rights than an elderly person in guardianship. You are stripped of everything. Everything.
Yeah.
Even your name. Mary Bush, who has fought so long and hard for her mother, was forced to blur her mother's face out on the videos of she and her mother, pictures of herself with her mother, because the guardian, which was a tacit admission she had assumed her mother's identity, claimed it was identity theft. How can it be identity? That's her mother. How could this
possibly be?
Hey,
it happened to me. You know, I went to take pictures of my mom. She was wearing clothes that were too short or too old for her. And I wanted to take a picture of that Band-Aid on the wrong hand. And they said, they saw me take a picture, and they came up to me and they said, oh, Claudia, you can't take pictures. I said, I'm doing it of my own mother. Well, you still can't take her picture. But yet my siblings went out there, and she had a birthday, so they celebrated, and they took a group picture. And nobody said anything about them.
Well, that's another thing, too, Claudia. In these nursing homes, so many people have had security guards or charge nurses demand their phones. They have no right to do that. You need a warrant to take someone else's property. They have no right to do that. And call the police. Yes, please do call the police, because I need to press charges against you. This was an illegal seizure.
Mm-hmm.
And but the law in these places seems to mean absolutely nothing. Again, because you're dealing with statute, and you have no rights under statute. If you read any statute, you have no rights under that statute. They will allow you certain privileges, but you do not have any rights. Claudia, we're down to the last 3 minutes here. This went really fast. Is there any last words you want to say to the people listening? And by the way, I want to apologize. The phone board is full. It has been since before the show started. And I'm sorry, I'm getting messages from people about how you can't get on the board. And I'm sorry, it's because it's full. And we'll be revisiting this. So please, bear with us on that. But Claudia, you got anything you want to add to this before we close?
Hey, this is something for everybody can do. Watch your parents. If you see something happening that you don't know if it's right or wrong, ask a question. I mean, you're the ones that have the ability to help your parents out. I mean, that's all I'm doing.
Yes.
I can't help my mom because she passed away many years ago. But I can help my neighbor. I can help other people in the facilities and other people in Washington State. I don't know. I'm just an ordinary citizen doing what I can. Any other questions?
And we just absolutely are going to keep hammering at this until we get it changed. We're not going to let up for those legislators that may be listening. And I see I have 4 area code 202 access denied people on here. That's Washington, D.C. Pay attention, because we're going to be there.
Hey, that's good. Maybe we'll help get some help for Susan Collins or
I don't know. People, in her state have said that they've contacted her multiple times, and she has refused to even respond to them concerning this matter. So I don't know. She may have turned over a new leaf. We'll wait and see. I'm going to pass judgment till I see what she does. And
who's the Democrat that's on that committee?
You're talking about
the Special Committee on Aging.
I don't know.
Isn't he from Pennsylvania?
It could be Casey.
Isn't it Bob Casey?
Yeah. Now, he's the same one that Tracy Miller, when she was still alive, just begged and pleaded with that man to help her save her brother. And he wouldn't move and do anything. And she fought for her brother right up to the day she died. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
We've got less than a minute left here. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. We'll be back next week with a new show. Claudia, you stay in touch with us so we know what's happening out in Washington State. And if there's anything we can cross-post for you, send it over. We'll get it up. For everybody who listened this evening, thank you very much for tuning in. We'll see y'all next week. Oh, and by the way, tomorrow night is Dialysis Advocates. Please tune in for that show. And we'll see you then. Good night, everyone.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you.